Hello again, everyone out there in Turd Land. This is your humble correspondent, Turd, with another thrilling, exciting, and edition of the Turd TF Metals Report podcast. Today, we have a unique treat. With me is author and another independent trader, John Soltes. John, came to my attention about a year or so ago, maybe a little less than that, when I discovered a book that he had written, 12 years ago, that was relevant back then and is still relevant today. And I thought, given the current economic and political climate here in the country, it would be wise to introduce Turdville to John and to his book. So, John, welcome to the TFMR podcast.
And very pleased to be here today.
Well, again, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join
us.
It's
my pleasure.
I mentioned this book. You wrote this book called Only in America back, in 1999. Is that right, John?
Actually, a little bit before that. I started writing this in the 90s. And around then, I started noticing people were talking about their institutions. And I noticed this sort of tone of, if not dissatisfaction, almost distrust. For example, I started hearing, and I'm talking about regular people here, not fringe people.
Right.
They started talking about the media and the liberal media and things like that. And I found that striking because if you think back, there once was a time in this country where we trusted the guy who read us the news at night so much that we called him uncle.
Right.
And we literally made him part of the family. Now all of a sudden people were turning on this and it was like this distrust, this liberal media and this liberal corporate agenda they have and all this stuff. And, you know, people started going on about that, the banking system, all sorts of things. And I just found that striking. And I noticed there was an undertone against this. Now, this was the 90s when the stock market was roaring and, you know, we had the wealth effect and people were feeling pretty good. But that was beneath it all. And if anything, I think people have just gotten more dissatisfied as time went on. But that's when I started writing this. And, you know, and I just want to say, you know, you've read the book. Only in America is the America I don't want to see.
Right.
But it's something that, you know, it's at least plausible, I think, if certain things and certain policies continue on the way that they are.
Well,
so that's...
Go ahead, John. I mean, interrupt you. There's my phone.
No, that's pretty much it. Go ahead.
Well, and I guess it fits in a bit here as well in that the aftermath of some of the events in the book reads right into some of the things we ponder here at TF Metals Report about the end of the...
Yes, in fact, yes, I thought of that. In fact, you could say that Only America is really the story of the end of the great Keynesian experience.
Yeah, in a sense, yes.
It's told very personally through our main character, but Keynesian economic policy factors very greatly into the book, to say the least.
It certainly seems to. And I know one of the eye-opening things that first got an attention back, again, Ned, you first wrote this book in the 90s, you first published it and were ready to release it in the fall of 2011.
Yes, if you look at the hardcover publication date, you'll see it was around August of 2001, and you know I'm all ready to go with this, and then 9/11.
It's some really shrewd timing there, John.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yeah.
So I have this warehouse of books, and remember, this was in the days before on-demand. You know, a book really was a production back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really felt with the country being as sensitive as it was, a book about chaos and in some cases domestic terrorism or whatever, unrest in the United States, wasn't quite what I thought the public would want to deal with right now. So we actually, we literally sat on these crates of books. And boy, it was a good 6 months before we let it out after that. So,
but gosh,
yes, sorry.
Go ahead. What takes place in the book? It reminds me of, some people referred to Tom Clancy, referred to an author named Joel Rosenberg after 9/11, and that they wrote books that kind of theorized different forms of terrorist attacks. And then when it came to pass, they thought, gosh, how did they? And they got a lot of notoriety for that. And well, in this book, one of the things that you theorized is a disputed election ends up going to the Electoral College. And yeah. all of that then comes to pass in the year 2000. And
yeah. Yes, that was another thing. Back then, books took a little longer to get produced than they do now. And while this election, and we had to even put a disclaimer in the book about that, while this election of 2000 is going on, you know, we're in production, and I'm just saying, oh my gosh, I wish this could be on the market now. The attention we could get for this, what would be going on, and you see what happened in 2000 didn't. It came sort of close to what happens in the book with things moving through the Electoral College and beyond.
Yes.
As they do. And yes, that certainly has a part to play in the book too.
Well, and again, not to give away too much of the plot of the book, because I think anyone that visits the site would get a kick out of buying the book and reading it. But there is a presidential candidate that is, I guess we call him kind of a populist third-party candidate.
Yes.
And with people being, I don't want to use disenchanted is the word I'm looking for, with the other two candidates, there's kind of a popular uprising to a third party.
Yes, well, one reviewer characterized him as a cross between Ross Perot and Huey Long. That may not be too far off. But the thing is, as you read the book and you see how that subplot develops, he really is whatever people want him to be, because people are out finally get so fed up with the two-party system that they reach for this guy because he's something different, and he's really what they wanted to be. If you're pro-business, he's pro-business.
Mm-hmm.
If you're against government regulation, he's against all that.
Mm-hmm.
He's whatever you want him to be. He is also a very unique character, but it's just people finally get so fed up, they finally make the connection that the two-party system is really a one-headed monster, that they go for this guy for better or worse, and not always for the better,
yeah.
as you see in
and
the book.
Things kind of disintegrate from there, and now you look at, here we are 12, 14 years on since you wrote it, and gosh,
yeah.
People are seeing the two parties as two heads of the same monster.
So they're really starting to,
yeah. And the disappointment and frustration with the entire system that's reflected in the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street movement, and people kind of further isolating themselves. Heck, I read it in the comments of my site of, nobody, I'm not being critical of myself or of the readers, but I mention often how we've got to avoid this every man an island personal anarchy approach.
Yeah.
It seems as a country and as a society, we continue to head further and further down that path. And again, it dovetails
yes.
into what you wrote a dozen years ago.
Yes. And it's interesting you say that, because as I look at the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street, the problem I see with both groups, first of all, there's no unification, and neither group really, to me, maintains the objectivity that I think you need for a true revolution. For example, the Occupy Wall Street crowd seems to let the White House off the hook for everything. Nobody's occupying Pennsylvania Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
With the Tea Party, they're letting private industry off the hook,
yeah.
and nobody's marching on ExxonMobil. So what it boils down to, again, it's the same thing. We're still rooting for the home team. It's still about our guy. We don't want to blame him for anything or our whatever. Because it's still the home team, the two-party system remains safe, sound, and unchallenged. And there's really no progress yet with that. I mean, these groups are still at odds with each other. There's no unification. I would think that, for example, Fox News, which is very pro-Tea Party, obviously, I would think they would at least sympathize in some small part with Occupy Wall Street, since, part of it is about Wall Street and bankers. But instead, they've just engaged in this jihad against them, and it's just they attack them on all fronts. So there's no unification. It's still about us and them, and it's still really, for 2012, it's still the two-party system intact.
Yeah, and those movements have then been co-opted by the prevailing parties. And
well, yes, and I refer to, one, the Occupy Wall Street as the civil anarchists, because they seem to be, for at least some of them, a breakdown of the system, at the same time wanting more government intervention. I call the other side the corporate anarchists, because what they're after is just total deregulation and total laissez-faire and let business be business and do kind of whatever they want. So, yes. And I would, you know, I'm not selling one or the other. I would just urge anyone out there who's thinking about joining either group to at least look behind the curtain before you join the group, because there are, you know, people that are, if not co-opting, as you say, these movements, they've at least put their trademark onto it. And sometimes, you know, sometimes when I see some of these protests, some of the Tea Party protests, some of those signs, I know there's a lot of gun rights stuff out there, and I know there are a lot of sincere people that have personal issues out there, but some of those signs could have been written by corporate executives out there. It's so, you know, it's so for deregulation. I ask myself, why would Joe Average, Joe Sixpack, possibly care about corporate deregulation? How does that benefit his life? So, you know, where is some of this stuff coming from?
heard somebody say it on the radio and thought it sounded good. But again, when you have this further fractionalization and the political gain that is trying to be had by pitting one person against another in an almost more virulent sense, on a daily, you know, getting worse every day, it does lead to, or at least I fear it leads to, ultimately what happens in your book.
Glad I brought it up.
For all listening, we did have a little drop of the recording there.
Okay. Was that a telecommunications problem or other technical
issues? I don't know. All of a sudden, you weren't there. And see, this is all part of the high-tech outfit that we run here, John. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, either that or somebody's listening in and doesn't like the conversation.
Well, that could be true, too. That would nothing would surprise me these days, John. Anyway, it was that what we were discussing was how this fractionalization plays into what ultimately happens in your book, and that is almost an anarchist society. And the way that we can get to that, how we can arrive at that point from where we are today, and you could certainly, where it seems folly to think that that could happen, but boy, when you lay it out in your book and you read the progression of events that leads you to that point, you sit back and you go,
It's certainly theoretically possible, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, if enough folks lose their jobs, if enough people lose their homes, you know, it's easy to be civil and maintain good behavior and have a stable society when most people are working and, you know, most people have something to eat. And they're warm in the wintertime and whatnot. But, you know, if enough of that breaks down, needless to say, sometimes manners suffer and behavior becomes not quite so civil.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well, and that, again, that's why I would encourage folks to read this book that I found. Again, we're visiting with John Soltes, the author of Only in America. We'll provide links. I assume we can get this through Amazon, right, John?
Yes, Amazon.
Perfect. We will provide a link for everybody if that's a direction they'd like to go. Let's talk a little bit about then, if we head in that direction and we have this end of this Keynesian experiment as we talk about it. How are, as a trader, how are you preparing yourself as an independent individual? I know we've talked. I've talked in the past about stacking physical metal and how you can use that to protect you. But I assume you've got some thoughts on that too.
Well, first of all, do the opposite of what they tell you to do on TV. But yes, physical metals are a good place to start, and you can, you know, you can diversify the portfolio. At the very least, do that. Even if you're not a bug, you can still put X percentage of your money into something tangible, whether that's gold and silver, whether that's some other physical commodity or something that represents that kind of physical commodity. If it's a paper instrument, you know, read all disclaimers and be aware of what goes on with that. But It will hurt nobody to put a certain percentage of your portfolio into some tangible real asset whose value will only increase as we continue on down the road of this monetary policy.
Yeah. Hard to see where that's going to be changing. The damage.
No, really.
The damage that's being done. And again, this, I feel like I'm drawing everything back to your book, but gosh, the damage that is being done to the mid, I don't want to call it the middle income folks because it's really hitting everyone, but for the folks that are captured by the U6 number of employment,
yes.
That, you know, is 16%, or if you follow shadow stats, it's 22%. And those are the
yes.
folks that are either unemployed, they've been unemployed so long that they're not even looking for a job anymore, or they're underemployed.
Yes.
They're working, you know, delivering pizzas where they used to, you know, work in an office.
Right.
Those folks that are trying now to get by on $3.50 gasoline and $4 gallons of milk is only going to get harder and harder on them. And if you're looking for a time when the, I guess we'll call it a populist uprising, such as Occupy Wall Street or such as the Tea Party, could really take hold, it's when not the 99% really gets going, but it's that 22%.
Right.
Because those days, I fear, are coming due to these policies that the Fed has pursued.
Right. And those are the people that are, you know, a real threat to do something like that. Because, you know, even the people that are out there in the streets now are either going to go home after a long afternoon, or even, you know, even the people that are occupying it right now, you know, at some point they'll pack it up. You know, we'll see, especially as the weather gets colder, how much longer they want to be out there. But they'll go back, and unless they're unemployed, you know, they have something to go back to. If you don't have a job and you don't have, you know, any chance of getting the standard of living you had before, you're a threat to do whatever or react however, or at least be genuinely angry about, and you've got an issue. You know, you look at the Occupy Wall Street, that seems to be, you know, what are you rebelling against? Well, what do you got? That seems to be splintering in, you know, 1,000 different directions. If you're an unemployed person, you've got one single issue to wrap your head around. So,
yep.
You know, you're more focused. And that's kind of what some of these movements, I think, lack right now. But, you know, if you're unemployed, and it's been going on, and it's gotten to the point where you've been out of work so long that you're even off the government tally sheet, well, you know, you might be going in a different direction. And, you know, there's a character in the book who remarks that, you know, it wasn't really objections to social injustices that fomented revolution in this country. It was the disappearance of creature comforts. So.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
you know,
something to keep in mind, you know, we do have a very comfortable society. I would like to see it remain that way. But if you lose that sort of thing and you've been spoiled and you've always had that, just as in the book, you may react a little negatively and eventually you may begin to express that discontent outwardly.
All the way up to and through the I hate saying middle class just because it has such an
yes.
India caste system type feel to it.
Well, but that's really the group of people who've been hit the hardest. So,
yeah, well,
and that's really, you know, what's going on. And today I was watching the chairman, Bernanke's remarks today, and he was saying, well, the best thing we can do for a society is to, you know, for a stable society is to create jobs. But again, are these, you know, how long have these rates been this low? Is the situation getting any better? You tell me.
Yeah, right. And,
so.
And it's clearly getting worse.
Yes.
Well, all right. Two specific quick things, and then we'll wrap up. I mean, you're obviously a turdite in that you follow the site. Metals price has been awful volatile. As a trader, are you bullish
yes.
at this point? Are you kind of on the sidelines? You waiting to see what happens?
I think we are. Well, I was actually looking at the silver chart, and if you look on the chart, there's this very interesting intersection right now of this. And I'm talking about silver. I primarily trade silver. I mean, I've in the past, I've done pretty much every market, but right now I'm primarily in that. If you look at the intersection of the moving averages, there's a very interesting intersection that's going on right now. And the 50-day has made this sort of slope. It looks like a shallow mountain pass, and now it's curved down again. The 200-day has moved up to intersect. I think right now, to me, I think we're on the cusp of another move up. So I'm not so much on the sidelines. I'm sort of stepping forward a little bit right now, looking upward. I was also very encouraged looking at the chart at the end of September by the big dragonfly candle we made when we touched down to silver, almost down to the $26 mark.
Right.
Mark. And from there, it created what looked to be, for a moment, a bear flag, but it looks like it's popped up out of that. We're making this pullback into the 33.50 zone, 33. I think we'll turn up from here. So I'm looking at on the cusp of another move upwards. We'll see. I always keep in mind, though, and I know you have a lot of traders out there, you know, especially with silver, I always like to say if you're trading silver, wear your fireproof gloves at the keyboard.
Yeah.
Because well, I mean, most retail traders tend to play things from the long side, and the market makers know this. So even if you're bullish in the short term, always be prepared for a down spike. Always have some mechanism to protect yourself from that. That's always possible because, you know, they know what side you're on, and you know, we'll have these sudden downdrafts, particularly in silver, which is crazy to begin
with. And it is the most.
So that's how I see things right now, but I think I think things look pretty okay for silver right now.
And I agree with you. And then just, I guess, out of curiosity, we're heading into another election year where we have a Democrat candidate that even his own base does not seem to like as not coming through.
No.
It doesn't seem like anybody on the Republican side is very content with their group of candidates. You have any?
No, and that's the thing about the election. You know, the current president hasn't really done much to warrant re-election, if you ask me. But on the other side, there's such a disjointed group opposing him that's the best thing he's got going for him. I don't really know. You know, it's like, I mean, the Republican side will pick out whichever, you know, corporate candidate suits them best. So again, we'll have the two-party system in action again.
Yep.
I'm puzzled sometimes again with Fox News why they would not be in love with Ron Paul, who's the most ideological pure conservative there is. And again, I'm pushing him. I just find it remarkable they don't push him.
Yeah.
So. It really, the election's up for grabs, but that's only because neither side has really solidified itself. I only give the advantage right now to Obama just because I just don't see who's going to emerge from the other side that's going to really galvanize people like that. And I just see things going on pretty much through 2012. I think, though, as early as 2016, particularly if we have four more years of what we've been going through or worse, we may see the emergence finally of a true viable third party candidate as people really start to make the connection between, you know, the similarities rather than the differences between the two parties. For example, you know, Barack Obama and John McCain in the last election couldn't have been more different on everything, but when it came time to bail out the banks, they suddenly linked arms in record time, and it was all kumbaya.
Yeah.
So I think as people start to notice things like that and make the connection, you would see, you know, the room for a viable third-party candidate, like I said, as early as 2016, and then we'll see, you know, what kind of change we get in this country. But for now, it's, you know, I think it's status quo for 2020.
Or as in your book, John, you have a Democrat president running against a Republican that apparently has no popular support, and you get a third-party candidate.
Right.
That sounds at least somewhat familiar to current day.
Yes,
so
it does seem, yes.
So I will again encourage anyone listening to take a look at this book, and support John's efforts, because by buying the book and reading it yourself, it's not a long read. I probably read it myself in about a week, and with my limited.
Yes, your patronage would be much appreciated. We're not a big conglomerate publishing house, so you know, word of mouth and Amazon sales, you know, do wonders for us and are much appreciated.
Well, John, thank you for your time, and it was really a pleasure to talk with you. And hopefully, as we turn the corner into 2012, not only would it be fun to visit again just about the metals, but also just to get your insights as to how the whole electoral process is playing out. So hopefully,
anytime.
Well, hopefully we can do this again soon. Again, John Soltes is the author Soltes. Of Only in America, available at Amazon or anywhere fine books are sold, something like that, right, John?
Yeah, independent books.
There you go. Thank you, John, and let's talk again soon.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.